Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, check it out. Lucky us, we got Kay Crockford on the line. She's from the ACLU in Massachusetts. Wait, that's a good thing. I know that sounds kind of crazy to half the audience, but anyway, she's got this great website. It's called privacysos.org. That's Spotlight on Surveillance and also Emergency Help Us. privacysos.org. Follow her on Twitter, OneCade. Hey, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Appreciate you joining us today. And your expertise on some of these recent matters of the government violating all our rights. I'm not sure. I guess let's do the phone records thing first, because the license plate thing, that just is going to completely blow my mind, and then I'll be worthless for the rest of the conversation. So can we please start with the DEA seizing our phone records a la NSA? Not getting them from the NSA, but they have their own some kind of program like this, and we know because Holder himself just admitted it and posted some files online. Am I right?
Yeah, so the DEA actually has a number of call tracking programs. The one that we learned about last week has to do with the DEA getting records from phone companies using subpoenas. And for those of you who don't know what a subpoena is, I like to say that it's the equivalent of a prescription in a doctor's hand. So a cop or a prosecutor, in this case a DEA agent, simply writes a subpoena and hands it to the person or company that he wants the information from. No judge ever authorizes that, let alone even sees it. So this program basically involved the DEA writing subpoenas to telephone companies asking for bulk record drops. So these
if I understand you right, you're saying, Kay, that basically they're only using the term subpoena to confuse us. It's not a court-ordered thing. It's an administrative subpoena.
That's right. Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This has nothing to do with any court. No judge is involved. So, they just write on a piece of paper, give me the phone records, hand it to AT&T, and AT&T, like a dutiful corporate partner in the surveillance state, says, sure, and hands it over. So we learned, though, that this program, which, by the way, only was interested in Americans' international calls. So according to what we learned last week, the DEA did not, through this program, monitor or create a database for including call records domestically. It was just if you called somebody in France or somebody in France called you, then bingo, those records would be included in the DEA database. This has been going on since the 1990s. So this well predates what we've known about the FBI and NSA's call tracking program, which reportedly started after 9/11. This is, dating back 25 years.
And now ACLU did not know about this. This has been entirely secret since the Clinton years?
Yeah. Let me tell you, man, there's a lot of stuff we still don't know about. You know, I sometimes think about that in the context of stingrays, right? The stingrays are those technologies that enable the government to actually bypass the phone company and directly spy on our phones using this high-powered piece of technology, which essentially acts like a cell phone tower and tricks phones within service range of it to send data to the cops instead of to our phone companies. Stingrays have been in use by law enforcement in this country for decades, and local law enforcement has been using them for around a decade. And we really only just started talking about this issue over the past year or so. It was pretty much unknown to the public, even to organizations like ours, the ACLU, and we investigate this stuff and make hell for the government about it. That's my job. You know, we only really started becoming aware of the widespread use of these things within the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's our fault. The problem is that law enforcement is incredibly secretive about this stuff. So what I worry about is it's not so much the programs of yesterday or the things that we already know that are going on, although those are obviously very concerning. But, you know, I'm worried about what the hell are they doing right now that we don't have any idea about? Because as you said, you're right. This was going on for 25 years or 23 years. You know, they only stopped doing it, they say, in August 2013. But the reason they stopped doing it, the DEA's International Call Record Dragnet, is really interesting. And that's because, if you'll remember, in August 2013, that was right after the Edward Snowden leaks started dropping in June of that year. And that summer, a couple months later in August, I forget who it was, I think Reuters first published that that AT&T was putting its employees in DEA fusion centers, DEA intelligence centers, and giving DEA agents access to 27 years of AT&T call records. And that was, again, without any sort of court approval. You know, they just lean over and say, can you look up this number for me? And AT&T employees who are actually assigned to work for the DEA, basically, as surveillance agents farmed out, would search through 27 years of, and that includes domestic call records, too. So it appears as if the reporting that's been done on this, Wall Street Journal wrote a piece that said that Holder basically killed the international call records program around the same time that the news broke about the domestic DEA call tracking program, which, by the way, is still in existence as far as we know.
Right. Yeah, that was lower down on my list of questions here. But now, so these DEA subpoenas, they're basically, they amount to general warrants, it sounds like, is what you're describing, where the subpoena is almost as broad as like that FISA Verizon order that Greenwald first published, right? Where here's an entire category of communication. Go intercept it if you want.
That's right. And, you know, if I were the DEA, I'd be doing this too, frankly, because the problem is that the law is bad. And I've warned about this even at the state level. Like here in Massachusetts, for example, we have a law that I call the Administrative Subpoena Statute that enables local prosecutors to write administrative subpoenas, the same things, to phone companies, internet companies, and obtain metadata. That is, who you emailed, when, your IP address, showing your location, you know, call records, bank records, things like this, without any sort of judicial oversight or approval. And I have basically worried for many years that this same kind of thing is going to happen at the state level. Why? Because if I were a cop or a prosecutor and I said, all right, I want these records, these records, these records, you theoretically, under the law, there's nothing stopping them from writing a subpoena specifying that they want every single person's phone record. You know, the equivalent, I guess, in a way, I think that it would be unreasonable, obviously, to interpret the statute as it's written to allow that. But if those DEA agents, what I'm trying to say is, wrote subpoenas implicating every single person in this country's call records, that is 300 million subpoenas, that would be totally within their rights. So I guess they just figured, well, since we could write 300 million subpoenas and say, give me this person's call record, give me this person's call record, they just decided, well, we'll just write one instead, mm-hmm. and we'll take all of those records.
Well, and they could have just as easy argued that, hey, listen, you know, tapping the or keeping the records of who calls what foreign drug dealers, that's only step one. We got to keep records on everybody that they talk to domestically and the rest of their supply chain, right? And so the excuse
exactly.
is built in to, and then, you know, 6 degrees of seven of Kevin Bacon and all that, six or seven.
So that's right, yeah. And
everybody knows somebody who can score some coke. That doesn't mean anything.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we've seen that what happens with these really, really lax statutes that grant law enforcement these incredibly broad powers to invade our privacy, again, without warrant, in Virginia, where federal prosecutors actually said to local police, they said, look, you guys are obtaining all of these call records through subpoenas, criminal investigations, the rest. You've got all these cell phone records. Why don't you just hold on to them and keep them in a centralized database? And then you can look at them anytime you want, and we can look at them anytime you want. And that's what they did. And so now in Virginia at a fusion center, there's this place that's almost the sort of state equivalent to what the DEA is doing nationwide with AT&T. And look, the fundamental problem here is that the overwhelming legal...
All right, sorry, we'll be right back in one sec.
Sure, sure.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Cade Crockford from the ACLU in Massachusetts and the great blog Privacy SOS. You can also follow her on Twitter, OneCade, on Twitter. And so we're talking about these federal cops writing warrants to themselves, for themselves, to keep total phone records on all international calls, which is sure as hell violating my rights. I don't know who else's, but... Boy, sure got my number. Anyway, I'm sorry. I forget right where we were when we were interrupted by the break there. But
oh, yeah, no problem. I was just saying that, you know, this call records program, which, by the way, Holder has said is ended, although the domestic call record collection continues as far as we know. This is just one example of a much larger problem, which is that the government – taking the view that metadata is basically up for grabs, that they don't have to have any judicial oversight if they want access to call records through administrative subpoenas, IP addresses, bank records, even location records potentially. So that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem because the way that modern society is shaking out is very, very different from how things looked in the 1970s when the Supreme Court ruled on the decision, made the decision that, you know, which numbers you dialed were not private in the sense that the government had to get a warrant to get them. We are living
this
in a
very... This
is that
third-party doctrine you're talking about.
That's exactly right, yeah. So,
and which makes no sense on the face of it. If you do business with anyone of any kind, then... all of those records are up for grabs for the government. Under what theory?
I mean,
in what free country is that the law? That's insane.
Yeah, it's terrible for business. It's terrible for privacy. It's terrible for political dissenters. I mean, it's just all in all terrible. It's really good for the government, though, because it gives the government the ability to track our spending habits, where we go, who we talk to, how frequently. For Christ's sake, it even basically allows them to track when we go to sleep and when we wake up in the morning, because most of us, the first thing we do is touch our iPhone. And if they have records, metadata records showing when we make text and phone calls or when we start surfing the web or looking up the New York Times, then they pretty much know exactly when we're asleep and when we're awake. So, you know, these are metadata, contrary to the government's ridiculous position publicly, is in fact much more revealing in many instances than content, than the things that we actually say over the phone or in emails.
Right. That brings us to our next subject too, because
exactly.
All that location data about who's in whose living room and whoever rode in the back seat of what car, where, and that kind of thing with who, and the records going back for years and years. Like you say, they can just go to the company and say, hey, give us all these records that you guys have had. And then they can just apply them all going retroactively and use them for police power purposes. And this is not just the location data on our cell phones that they're saving, but the license plate thing. And the thing about this is this is what I was completely paranoid and 100% right about, and starting in about 1994 or so, when I saw a Hughes aircraft promotional video for, we can put a transponder in everybody's car and a camera every few miles, and we can tax everybody by the mile, and we'll just rule their sorry asses. They'll belong to us, and this is how we'll do it. And the technology was already good enough where they could tell a pack of motorcycles from a car full of transponders or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it was, they were pushing it on the cities and the governments then. And it's so easy to see that once the networking is complete, once the computer power is there, then you can have the IRS tied right in with the local sheriff's department, tied in right with the Department of Transportation camera. And it's you could have a digital, digitally enhanced system of basically total law enforcement against all Americans, all of whom are guilty of multiple felonies all the time.
Right.
There's no escape from this thing they're building here.
Exactly. So the DEA, like you referenced, we've learned through records that the ACLU obtained through a FOIA request, has been keeping records, collecting records, about where we drive. They're using license plate readers to do this. License plate readers obviously have an immediate use to law enforcement. You can connect them to hot lists, so cops running them in their cars can identify immediately without checking the plates manually if there are stolen cars or people with outstanding warrants. You know, a lot of people don't like that. It's definitely the least problematic part of license plate tracking. The real issue comes when they keep all of the data. So every plate that's scanned by these machines is fed into any number of databases where, you know, some companies and government agencies are keeping the data forever. The DEA has now said that they're keeping it for 6 months at a time. Yeah, maybe they're telling the truth when they say they delete it after 6 months. But even if they are, that still means that they have 6 months of data showing where you've been, you know, potentially where you work, where you play, where you worship, whether or not you go to political protests. In fact, one of the records that DEA released to us included plans to station license plate trackers outside of gun shows. So they basically want to create databases full of gun owners in this country. Now, obviously, the license plate reader does not distinguish between somebody who owns a gun legally and someone who owns a gun illegally. So that's a real problem. You know, there are a lot of problems with the government's dragnet surveillance programs, not least among them that they're so secretive. We really don't know how this information is being used. And one of the things that scares me the most is that, you know, the combination of all these different kinds of tracking, the call records, the license plate tracking, and then the innumerable other databases that law enforcement has access to today that contain huge amounts of information about all of us, not just people who are suspected of serious crimes. When all that information is combined, it gives the government just this incredible window into our private lives. And since all of that surveillance is dubiously legal, which is to say, if it was ever challenged in court, it might be ruled unconstitutional, the government has great interest to keep it secret. And because of that, we are concerned that something called parallel construction is happening more and more under our noses.
Right.
And that basically means, you know, the DEA, through its call records program, finds that you and I talk on the phone a lot, and you also talk to somebody who's suspected of being a major drug trafficker, right? So then they think maybe I'm a drug dealer and you're my guy. So as a result of this potentially illegal, unconstitutional call records program, they've identified me as somebody who might be up to no good. Now, they also have a license plate tracking program. So because they've identified me through their call records program, they put my license plate number into one of their systems, and then they find that I've been driving in the neighborhood where they think another drug dealer lives. So then they pick up the phone and they tell a local police officer, you know, if you see this car, you should pull them over. Just say that they didn't come to a complete stop at a stop sign. Do whatever you need to do. And then once you pull them over, search the car. Figure out how to do it. Just search it. Make it a legal search. You know, bully them. Do whatever you have to do. And they'll uncover some amount of drugs or whatever. And the cop will basically tell the person who's pulled over, oh, yeah, this is just freak luck. You know, I pulled you over because you were.
Bottom line being, they already do this, and that's completely unconstitutional, isn't it?
Exactly.
Just on the face of it. And obviously completely unfair. All right, Privacy SOS for the great blog of Cade Crockford. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Good talking to you.
Thanks for having me, man. Take care.
And she's one Cade on Twitter, guys. Follow her on Twitter. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'll Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org.